It's the Easter season, and we've got many churches that will be gathered together this next week to honor Christ and the sacrifice that he has made, and all in all, that is a good thing because we need to honor and remember the sacrifice that Christ has made for humanity. But as I was reading and studying about this a little bit, I came across a little statement about Herod the Great, a man that sent out the decree that after Christ was born, that all two-year-olds in the land of Bethlehem and Nazareth, this area, was to be killed because he was so afraid of Jesus Christ, this king that they said was now in the world. So there's very little said about Herod the Great. There's very little that we're told about in the Bible except this terrible thing that he did. So I just put down a few points that I learned about Herod, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about tonight. It's kind of a history lesson. It's not a real complex lesson, and it's just kind of a bunch of thoughts that I have jumbled up here. But I want to talk just a little bit about Herod the Great, just to see who this man was, what he was, to see what the people were dealing with in their rulers back at this time, because this was a terrible thing. You know, this really about the only thing we see and know about Herod is his cameo appearance that it was made when he did say that he wanted to kill all little boys 2 years old in the land. In reality, as I begin to search this, the city of Bethlehem was a little community, probably 300, 400, 500, maybe 700, 800 people. So the percentage of two-year-olds in this was probably not more than a couple of dozen. However, if one of your kids was one of that couple of dozen, of course, this was a very serious thing. He reigned as a Roman-appointed king over Judea from the years 37 to 4 B.C. He was a son of Antipater, who was an Edomite. He was responsible for changing the rule of Judea. He was from the royal family, descended from the Maccabees to the Edomites, to the Herodians. He was a very intelligent man. He was a very charismatic man. He was a very astute politician. And he was a man that knew exactly what he wanted and knew exactly how to get what he wanted. He achieved his political aspirations through Caesar Augustus at Rome, and he was appointed by the Roman government to be the king of Judea. Herod was a whole lot like his father, Antipater. Back in the year 63 B.C., there was a great civil war that broke out in Judea. It was between two brothers. Aristobulus II, which was the last of the kings that were ruling the area at this time, and the high priest by the name of John Hyrcanus II. And we need to remember this name, John Hyrcanus, because this is a man that is going to figure very deeply into the life of Herod and will have a lot of different things that to do with Herod, most of them that led to his downfall. Rome interviewed in this civil war, they took away the sovereignty of Judea. They made the region a Roman province. And because of the political clout that Herod had and Antipater had, Herod was able to eventually gain a governorship in this area. It was divided into five districts. Hyrcanus was left as the high priest of this area with ruling authority. He was one of the most important men in Judea. Just as soon as Antipater was made the high priest of this area, he was able then to appoint his sons Phasael and Herod and made them governors of this district, Jerusalem and Galilee. So Herod became a governor in Judea over Galilee at the age of 25, a very important post for a very young man. His governing style was much like that of his father. He was very ambitious. He was an opportunist. He was very presumptuous. And they say that he was just about as cruel and barbaric as any individual has ever been that has ever lived. Shortly after he took reign in Judea, there was a bandit by the name of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a thief. He led a pack of thieves. And when they were caught and he was brought to Herod, Herod said, "Execute him." So he condemned him and they executed this man on the spot. And this caused a great amount of problems in Judea because the Jews had a law that said before anyone could be executed, they had to be brought before the Sanhedrin, and then the Jewish Sanhedrin court would be the one that condemned and executed, and Herod just conveniently eliminated the Jews in this step. And the Jews despised him. They despised Herod. And they started to do everything in the world that they could to get rid of Herod. And they got him to the point that he left. He went into exile into Damascus for a while. And then went on to Rome. And through Rome and Caesar Augustus, he was able to go back to Judah and to take his kingship over. And there was a very large Roman army that went with him. They disposed the ruler that was in Judea that had taken his place. And Herod once again became the governor and the ruler of Judea through the strength and the might and the power of Caesar Augustus and the Roman army. There were three periods to the rule of Herod. The first was from 37 to 25 B.C., before the birth of Christ. And during these years, Herod took steps to make himself the sole ruler of this area. And he did this by removing each and every threat to his throne. The second, from 25 to 13 B.C., he began to build. And he put on a massive building project. He expanded Judea and he expanded his rule. And he did a lot of great things as far as commerce in the land. And then the final period of reign from Herod was from 13 to 4 B.C. And that is defined by the barbaric way that Herod lived and treated people and the very tragic descent that he went into before he died. In the first reign of Herod, when he first got back to Judea and he was given the authority and the power with the backing of the Roman government, the first thing he needed to do was to assuage the people and to get the people so that they would accept him, because the Roman government did not take war and unruly people. They wanted peace, they demanded peace, and their governors were charged with enforcing peace. So he needed to get the Jewish people to accept him so that there could be peace. He was half Jew. His mother was not Jewish, so he started with two strikes against him because he was a half-Jew, and because of the way he had acted with Hezekiah and gone against the Sanhedrin and the Jewish people, they didn't have much use for him, and they continued to rebel against him. In fact, they rebelled against him to the point that the loyalty of the Jewish people began to go to the Pharisees, which was another strong sect of people. They began to put their faith and their loyalty in the Pharisees, taking their faith and the loyalty away from Herod. And Herod realized right quick that this was a problem he was going to have to fix. So he took his own money, his own wealth. He spent his own wealth, and he was able to persuade the Pharisees to accept him. And through the acceptance of the Pharisees, he was able to gain the acceptance of the Jews to a point. But they still hated him. They always would hate him. But he was able, through the Pharisees, to gain some of their subjects and to have peace. To do this, he was willing to imprison this wife, his first wife, Doris, an Edomite wife, and their son, Antipater II, named after his father. So he put his son and his wife in prison. He removed them, later they were executed. And then he married this Hyrcanus, John Hyrcanus, the chief priest. He married his granddaughter, Princess Marianne. This also proved to be a disaster for King Herod. The Jews still hated him. They still didn't have anything to do with him. He had put his wife and his son in prison. He bought off the Pharisees, and still they hated him, but peace was able to be obtained in Judea. But the nobles of Judea still hated him. And they continued to rail against him, and they continued to cause trouble for him. And in a Herod's unique way, he ordered that 45 of the richest, the most influential, and the most prominent members of Judean society be brought before him. And when the 45 of the most prominent Judean citizens were brought before him, he condemned them and had them executed on the spot. The uprising of the nobles decreased at this time, and there was very little more. The Jews then were brought into submission. In 40 B.C., the Parthians invaded Jerusalem, and they took captive Hyrcanus, this chief priest. So they've taken him to the captivity. Herod replaced him with a Babylonian Jew, a man by the name of Hananel. Well, this caused another problem. Because Hyrcanus's wife, Alexandria, which was also the grandmother of Marianne, his wife, disapproved. So she, also being politically astute, went to Cleopatra, who went to her husband Mark Antony, which was one of the leaders in the Roman government, and she complained about this Jew that had replaced her husband. And so, because of this political situation with Mark Antony and his power with the Roman government, Herod had to change his mind again. So, he, at the insistence of the widow of, or the wife of Hyrcanus and the grandmother of his wife, he appointed the brother of his wife, a man by the name of Aristobulus, a man that was 17 years old, and put him in the position of chief priest, the same position that his grandfather had before he had been kidnapped and abducted. And this caused another problem, because the chief priest is elected for life, and they had to be 30 years old, according to Jewish law. Aristobulus, who he did to try and keep peace and to keep peace in the family and to do what everybody had told him to do, the Romans and the Judeans, was 17 years old, and this created another problem. But he wasn't a problem long, because Aristobulus was very, very popular with the Judeans. He became too popular, and he became too popular too fast. And within a year of being put into the office of chief priest, at Herod's command, this young man was assassinated at a feast in Jericho about a year after taking the office. There was great political ties here with Mark Antony, the husband of Cleopatra, and these were the ties that Alexandra, the wife of Hyrcanus, went to. But about this time in history, as this politically astute Herod begins to look at the political field in Rome, he sees that Mark Antony is falling, and falling fast. And a Caesar by the name of Augustus is gaining fast. Well, Herod has always had this alliance with Mark Antony. This has been his man. But when he sees Mark Antony falling and Augustus rising, he realizes that his political affiliation must be changed, and it must be changed quickly before he loses the political connections that he has. So in a show of loyalty, he decides to make a trip to Rome to be in the presence of Augustus so that he might change his political alliances before it's too late. Well, Hyrcanus had been come back now from captivity and now was back as chief priest. But because of all the problems with Alexandria and the problems with Mark Antony and the problems with Aristobulus, he decided Hyrcanus really did not need to be left in charge in Judea for this long amount of time that he would be in Rome. So Hyrcanus was executed as well. Herod went on to Rome. He returned in about 30 B.C. and he returned with the blessings of Caesar Augustus. And not only did he return with the blessings of this new Caesar that had gone to preeminence over Mark Antony, but he was also given new districts of Jericho and Hippos and Samaria and Gaza and Jaffa. And he's greatly increased his area of and expanded his area of rulership. When he got back, it's time to take care of his wife, Mariam. This was the granddaughter of Hyrcanus and the granddaughter of Alexandria and the brother of Antropopolis, whatever. And he realizes now that this is not a good union for him politically. So when he came back to Judea, the first thing he does is accuses her of being unfaithful while he's gone. Immediately going out and find the man that has allegedly been unfaithful with her, he is immediately condemned and executed. Then he calls for an examination and investigation of his wife. She is found to be unfaithful. She is brought before him. She is condemned. And now she has been executed. And from the years 29 through 25 B.C., Herod went through his entire family tree of his wife and executed any and every one of the relatives of hers that he could find that would give even the slightest threat to his throne. This was an evil, barbaric man. He's put his first wife, Donna, and imprisoned her. He's imprisoned his son, Antipater II. Now he has killed his second wife that he married for political gain. He has killed her grandfather. He has killed her brother. He has killed the one that allegedly was in the relationship. And then he went out and killed all the rest of her family. So here's where we are in the first period, which takes us to the second period. Things are pretty stable now. The noblemen have been destroyed. All of her family has been destroyed. All threats have been destroyed. He's pretty happy in his reign. Peace reigns in Judea. The Romans are happy with him. And this is a period of time from B.C. 25 to B.C. 13 that there's some great expansions in Judea. Massive building projects. Everything in Judea is made to look as Roman as possible in order to continue the good standing that he has with Caesar Augustus. He constructs a number of important cities and names most of them to honor Caesar or to honor his own Edomite family. He founded the city of Phasaelis, which he named after his brother. He founded the city of Antipatris, which he named after his father. He restored a lot of the fortresses. He really fortified Judea to protect it and its defenses. And then he got into Jerusalem. He built walls and a theater and an amphitheater. And he brought everything he could find that was Greek into Judea and into this land. It was referred to as a Hellenistic approach because he was doing everything that was of the Greeks. He raised a massive temple in honor of his patron, Mark Antony, the one that he went to Rome so that he could get out of the political alliance with. But he still was able to build a project for Mark Antony. And then he tackled the project, which was a temple in Jerusalem, a massive work that was not completed until AD 64. This was just 6 years before Jerusalem was destroyed in AD 70. So this was a project that took some 70 to 80 years to build, but he rebuilt the temple of Solomon. It's said that he who has not seen Herod's building has never seen beauty before. It was a magnificent structure that Herod was able to build. But the Jews still didn't like it. He followed biblical criteria when he built the temple. He let the priests do the work. He never entered the rooms. But just before things were beginning to happen and they were maybe beginning to accept him, he puts an image of an eagle up above the gate. And here we go again with the problems, because, of course, the Jews were not allowed these images. Then he went, and he built some temples that he dedicated to Apollo, and even built a temple that he dedicated to Baal. So, he still did not have the Jews. They still hated him. They didn't appreciate the Greek culture that he was bringing into their area. He surrounded himself with Greek orators and philosophers and cabinet members. He surrounded himself with Greek politicians, and he boasted as to being more closely related to the Greeks than to the Jews. And this Greek, Hellenization of Judea, he did to ingrate himself with Augustus Caesar, proving that his loyalty to Caesar was above his loyalty to God. And when the people in Judea complained, he increased their taxes, he banned their public assemblies, he imprisoned, he found them in contempt, he condemned, and he executed those that stood up against him. This was the pinnacle of Herod's success, and there was a lot of peace in Judea at this time, but the walls were just about to crumble down on King Herod. The final period of his life was a period from 13 to 4 B.C., and it was a time of barbarity. It was a time of cruelty. It was a time of much bloodshed. It was a time when he betrayed his family. It was a time when he became very, very sick. And it was a time when he shed blood of anyone that got in his ways. Alexander and Aristobulus were two of his sons by his second wife, Mary Ann. They were suspected of conspiring against him. And they were still angry at him for executing their mother. So he was now having trouble with his two sons, Alexander and Aristobulus. Well, to combat this, he goes into exile and brings his first son from his wife Donna out of exile, Antipater the second, and brings him in, puts him into his cabinet so that he's got some help from his other son. Doris was his first wife. So Alexander and Aristobulus are plotting against Herod because he killed their mother. And now here comes Antipater the second. And he is plotting against Herod because he hates his dad. But he hates Alexander and Aristobulus too because they are a threat to him becoming king. So Antipater begins to spread the rumors about these two men, his stepbrothers. And because of the rumors, Herod decides that he must not take this chance. So he had Alexander and Aristobulus condemned and executed. That takes care of those two. The granddad's gone, the mother's gone, and now he's executed his two sons. Well, Antipater still had a hatred for his father, and now that these other two brothers were gone, he was in pretty good shape. He'd been brought out of exile, and he was very important in the land. He won support in the courts of Judea. He was growing, he was becoming more popular, but the hatred that he had for his father was the greatest thing. So he made plans to poison his father, and he did it through one of the brothers of Herod, a man by the name of Phasaurus, a man that dined with Herod regularly. So Antipater got poison to Herod's brother Phasaurus, and had Phasaurus take this in to dine with Herod with the intention of killing Herod with his poison. But Herod was pretty good with the espionage, realizing what his brother was going to do, and the poison had his brother drink the poison. So the brother, in fact, got the penalty of death that he was going to give to Herod. And when he found out, before he died, that the problem came from Antipater, his son, the next execution was his son Antipater too, which was his first son by his first wife, Doris. So just about all of his kids on both sides, and his wives and his grandparents, they've all gone now because little Herod has perceived that they are a threat, and he's killed them all. And this is about the time that we have Christ come on the scene, and this old paranoid king, after hearing about this new king of the Jews that was born in Nazareth, ordered all children in the city, age 2, to be destroyed. Shortly after this, the Bible tells us, and we read this, I think it's the 3rd chapter of Matthew, Herod becomes very, very sick. And it's a very incapacitating illness. And it's something that is very hurtful, and it is something that causes him a great amount of pain and tragedy. They think that maybe it was a kidney, started with a kidney disease, and then as the kidney died, it turned into a very nasty, massive case of gangrene. And they say that his body literally ate itself up from the inside. A very painful death. But before he died, old Herod wasn't through. He called his sons, Archaeus, together and gave him Herod to the throne in Judea, Samaria. He brought his brother Antipas in and made him the tetrarch of Galilee. He brought his son Philip in and made him tetrarch of the regions east of Galilee. And he made him make one promise, because he wasn't through with his executions yet. He said, after my death, I want your soldiers to go out into the land of Judea and round up all of the nobles, all of the rich, all of the distinguished that are left from that 45 that he killed years earlier. And he said, when I die, just to show that I was king, I want every one of these nobles executed along with me. So his final act of cruelty was to be sure that all of the nobles and all of the rich and all of the prominent and all of the important in Judah would die with King Herod so that the Jews might lament his passing. This didn't happen. After he died, he had no more power. He had no more control. The barbarism and the cruelty was over. And Herod died a very painful and a very cruel death. He was a barbarian. He was mean. He was cruel. But he was also very smart. He was very astute as a politician. He knew the right people. He knew the right things. And when he saw the tide turning, he was astute enough that he could get into this and change directions. He was loved by the Roman government. He was hated by the Jews. He did shape Jewish culture, though, with the Greek culture of the world. He shaped Judea with political and economical and cultural ways in which it would never have happened. He brought the land into an area of power and a land. When Christ was born, it was a land where they were not poverty stricken. He was morally repulsive, but he was a towering figure in the history of Judea. I've said every bit of this to say this: there is a moral to this story, and I think it's a moral that we can realize even today. The world at this time belonged to God, just like the world belongs to God today. This is God's world. The Bible tells us that God puts men in power that he wants to be in power, good or bad, And that when someone is in power, God removes them from that power when he wants to remove them, whether they be good or whether they be bad. The Bible tells us that God's ways are not our ways, and that we are to put our faith in God and depend upon him for the decisions that are made. I think the lesson is we need simply to trust God. And I think Herod's a pretty good example of a man that was cruel, a man that was mean, a man that had many, many things against him. But this was a chosen vessel of God, and he ruled for some 30 plus years over God's people in Judea. So concludes my rambling. We'll have an invitation at this time. If we can help anybody, come forward as we say.